Welcome back, guys, to the A-List Lowdown for July 16th, 2025. Carney's Tariffs and Nudge, a special midweek edition during the above-average July temperatures, according to my AI. Here, it's like, we might get frost this week, but it's above average.
I did my morning sunrise, kind of step outside, just listen to birds. Put my phone in the glass. I was like, wow, it's cold today. It felt very chilly.
Yeah, it was cold here today. It was like probably in the 50s if we're Americans, and it was about, for the Canadians, it was like, when I went outside to go get the eggs, it was like 9. So that's not warm. That's not above average. I could tell you that. This should be the warmest part of the year. This should be like the dog days of summer, as it were.
The saddest part is it's your assistant, right? That's doing it. That's telling you this as well.
Oh yeah, I could get some answers out of it, but you'd have to push. But this is what I mean.
Like, how are they allowed to say this? How is it allowed to pick up this information? Where is it coming from? That it's a 2 degree warmer summer. I mean, this has been an obviously terrible start to a summer.
It's gotta been one be of the worst things we
remember. Cloudy, rainy, all the time.
It's just not one of the warmest, for sure. I mean, from a green and growth perspective, it's a great summer. The farmers are thrilled.
Yeah. I'm talking about from a summer.
From a heat perspective.
People want to be sunny and hot in the summer. And
Graham,
how can they say it's 2 degrees more than normal or whatever? It's just
1.7. It sounds infuriating. Like,
I mean, this is the, we're up against... Sometimes I just feel like we're up against an unbelievable challenge right now.
We need clone Tony's climate data thing, Majake.
Yeah.
Maybe that would help. So don't forget, if you're watching on YouTube, to like, share, and subscribe. Help us get, we're almost monetized. So we're like close. We're like 75 subs away, I think. So we need 75 more subs and a few more watch hours, but it's all sort of trending that way that we might be able to get paid for this since we don't really get any support. So,
yeah.
Which people can do at a-list.ca. Of course, we said if we don't have 100 supporters by episode 100, we're just going to shut her down. So we'll see. I think this is episode 45. We got way right, almost halfway yet. There. Almost halfway there. The great experiment might be a short one.
Yeah.
Because,
Joe G says it hasn't been that hot in Edmonton either. Yeah. That'll be the same, pretty much the same climate as Darren, probably.
Yeah, but probably with more rain.
That's pretty
soon. It gets a little hotter up there sometimes, but also a little rain. You're like, almost all the big storm systems miss me to the north.
The Chinook, yeah.
Almost all the tornadoes are to the north of me. I'm kind of in that band where if we got a tornado, I mean, there was a tornado in Lethbridge a few years back, but most of the real bad ones are like sort of like an hour north of me, between there and just north of Edmonton. There's this sort of belt of...
Which just happened to be between the two ice sheets, the Laurentide and the Cordilleran.
Dude, I was out when right? I went out and put out my trail cams the other day. And when I was coming down out of the hills, I was like, man, I'm driving through the ice sheet gap right now.
Yeah.
Because as soon as you get out of the plains, you can tell that's where that ice sheet was sitting, squishing that stuff flat.
Yeah.
It was like where my cameras are is in the gap, in the gap between the ice sheets. Looking for moose.
But I mean, isn't that a coincidence? That might not be a coincidence, right? Why the weather was different. Like, maybe that's why the ice sheets weren't one big ice sheet. Why there was still a gap between them is because of the corridor. You're talking about a corridor with a different weather system.
Yeah, could be.
Could be going all the way back. Like, maybe it's from the mountains or, like, just being east of the Rockies. Or
yeah, I think one was on the mountains. The Cordilleran one was basically on the mountains.
I think it came over the mountains and I think it came right up towards Calgary. I mean, the way I picture it is Nose Hill in Calgary was right between the two. Like that was like,
I think Calgary was probably under the Laurentide.
I don't think so.
I think the gap was further west.
No, I don't think so. I think it was right at Calgary.
It doesn't make sense because it's flat as a pancake.
Well, yeah, but that doesn't mean that,
So the flat end is where the ice ended.
I think the damage is from the melting, not from the iceberg sitting there. The iceberg, I mean the glacier.
I think it's from the city. I think that's what created the plains, was the weight of the Laurentide ice sheet. For some reason, it didn't do the same thing in the Rockies. Maybe because it's all bullshit. Anyway, we won't get into that here. We will get into, let's start with some CBC stuff. Let's start with, this is on the CBC Children's Channel. Let's take a look and see what CBC's up to, what they're trying to teach our kids these days.
This book is about how Evelyn accepts her older sibling Tessa for who they are. All summer long, Tessa listens to music in the dark and yells at Evelyn when she knocks on the door. When Tessa finally comes out, Tessa says, "I'm not your sister anymore. Just call me your sibling."
I like how even the cartoon sort of alludes to some deeper mental issues. Well, she's, before it happens, she's just in her room in the dark yelling at everybody.
Evelyn practices saying they instead of she and them instead of her. It only takes her a week to learn. Tess's parents take longer to learn.
Is this recent? Is this recent?
Yeah.
It's like... I mean, I can see it if it was 3 years older, but this is like, they don't know that it's kind of...
CBC's, you know, they're always a few years behind.
Yeah.
At the end of the book, Mom and Dad introduce the kids to a new neighbor. Mom says, "Our older child, Tessa, is not a boy or a girl. They are non-binary." Then the best thing ever happens. Tessa smiles. I love a happy ending.
So are you serious? That's about a kid, like a young kid who's non-binary?
Seems to be about a young kid who's non-binary. They can't make smile naturally, so they just, you know, chose this route.
Can I keep beating up on CBC a little bit, or make sure this a big CBC segment?
I'll still cut it in half, but yeah.
Well, this is Harrison Lohman here. He says, when you make complaints about patterns of bias or skewed reporting on the CBC, you're often met by CBC supporters who proceed to demand a list of examples. When they don't receive it immediately from you, they proceed to tell you you're the biased one. It's in your head. It feels like a bit of gaslighting, to be honest. So let me, as someone who has worked at the CBC, provide you a prime example of CBC coverage I think is glaringly biased, and you can tell me what you think. So you ready? This is some decent deconstruction here. Earlier this summer, the CBC published a radio TV story. The webpage version is headlined, "Supervised Drug Site at Kingston Prison Has Only Had One Visitor Despite Being Open Since 2023. The story details a trial project where the prisoners at a Kingston area prison have been given the ability to inject, snort, or swallow the drugs they've smuggled into their cells under the supervision of a nurse. Are you kidding me? The news hook is that only one inmate has visited the site since its inception more than a year ago. Then they proceed to interview three people, someone running the program, a retired academic expert sympathetic to the program, wanting it to be expanded, and a former inmate who was not in jail when the program started. All sources appear generally in approval of the pilot program. In the story, at no time...
So as long as you can get them in, you can do them.
No, I guess... let me see.
That's what I'm understanding, is if you can get them in... We'll give you a nurse and a room and you can go do your
job. I can't believe it. But I did hear recently about somebody who knows how they smuggle drugs into jails. How do you think they do this in Canada?
Up the butt.
No, really. This is a serious question.
That would be my natural assumption.
I know, but it's not. You're not going to believe how they're doing it. Like, it's way more obvious. Like, way more obvious.
They just mail it in a parcel.
That's what I said. Mail, put the post. You probably just mail it to the people and then they just get a package and they open it up and it's full of drugs. No. It's even like more obvious.
Okay, give it to me.
They drop it over the wall or whatever. They drop it into somewhere from a drone.
Huh.
Can you imagine that you can actually drop drugs? I mean, can this be real? They drop drugs into... the jails, the penitentiaries in Canada by drones. That's how these people.
I don't have a drop drone, so I don't have one of those ones that could drop stuff. But I'd imagine if you could, it'd be pretty easy.
I mean, but are you kidding me that there's not a fucking no fly list? Like, you're allowed to fly drones over a jail? I mean, how can that even be possible?
I don't know how they would know.
Be, you know what I mean? Like, wouldn't that be secure airspace or something? I mean,
you would think, but if I put my little drone up, like, you know, 1,000 feet, how would you ever know it was there?
They don't track the stuff flying around in the air up there.
I don't know. I think they're pretending.
I mean, you think they'd have a whole like view of everything that's happening there, just in case people try to escape or whatever.
I don't think they show up on radar and stuff, you know. I don't think they have any way to track the drones. I don't think they have any idea. Now, they say, unless they're doing it through the actual drone data. Like, you know what I mean? Unless, like, the DJI software is somehow doing it. But, like, because you're supposed to register it and this and that. I registered my first one. I didn't register my next one, and it still flies and works as it should.
Yeah.
So I don't know that someone knows where that drone is. It seems pretty overwhelming for the system to know where, you know, hundreds of thousands of drones are at any one time when they can't process my friggin' income tax or figure anything else out.
I guess I feel like for a drone to be low enough to accurately drop drugs to a fairly specific location, you know, you would be able to visually see it, or there would be some way to like just monitor. Hey, there's a drone up there. Like, you know, not allowed. Like, it's not going to be doing it from 10,000 feet. Would it be?
Well, I don't think you get it to 10,000, but you could definitely get it to a couple of thousand. I've had mine up to like 1500 meters.
No, I know, but that's what I'm saying. Like, you would, like, how high would you have to be?
I think from a couple thousand feet, you could do it. You could just, it would drop straight down. I mean, here's the thing, is the map for the map thing on the drone is good enough that you will know directly what you're above. You know what I mean? So if there's no wind.
Yeah, I guess. Joe says,
I would assume they drop it in the yard at night, and then the guy goes out and finds it in the morning.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, Joe says you would need a detector or thermal to find drones, and ain't no prison in Canada has that tech, LOL. Okay, back to the story here from Harrison. So in the story, at no time does the journalist speak to someone who sees this pilot program as the wrong approach. Keep in mind, in a recent Abacus poll shows a mere 19% of Canadians support expanding safe injection sites. You're literally ignoring the vast majority of the population.
Into prisons.
At no time does the journalist reveal the cost of the said program, a whopping $500,000 of taxpayers' dollars, so that a single inmate could get high. Nor do they speak to someone who says, as many in the public would rightly ask, if given the cost and almost non-existent use, whether it's worth continuing the program or whether there's a better way to spend this money.
Why does it cost money? Isn't the nurse presumably already working there? And the person, we're not paying for the drugs, are we?
No, it's,
where did the money,
$500,000? Well, I mean, it would be like salaries of maybe like I don't know if there's a physical setup, or, I mean, it's like, maybe they have a whole room. It's like a nursing unit in there or something, like,
so they didn't build the room, you know?
I don't know. Maybe, you know, that's maybe like advertising, marketing.
Staff. That's like seven full-time staff.
Marketing and advertising. I don't know. So instead, the CBC journalist exclusively focuses on the barriers to using the jail drug program, implying that all that you can change, i.e. look at making it easier for the inmates to use drugs. This coverage highlighting barriers implies that they should operate at night because its current hours don't line up with the inmates want to get high. In the written version of the article source, they prefer to take drugs during their free time after supper. This is unbelievable. I can't believe I'm reading all this about my own country. That prisoners, I mean, I'm, you know, I was close to ending up in either death institutions or jail with my addiction, and I can't imagine being able to use in jail. Like, that was one of the reasons why you didn't want to get caught. The prisoners need to be allowed to smoke crystal meth as part of the program. that prisoners need to make it so that using the program won't mean users getting unwanted attention from fellow inmates, etc. Last week, CBC's general manager and editor-in-chief Brody Fenlon said, "The job of a journalist, a CBC news journalist, is to report facts, to proportionately surface the variety of viewpoints that exist about those facts, to provide context and counter-narratives where they exist, and to ensure credible analysis is in the mix. The goal is to give you a 360-degree view of a story so you can draw your own conclusions." Really? We don't shy away from contrarian views or perspectives that challenge orthodoxy. The best journalism often involves facts and viewpoints that challenge our own worldview. In what world is this a 360-degree view of the story? In what world is this a story that challenges orthodoxy? Instead, this coverage appears to tell viewers of the CBC, the CBC approves of safe injection sites for criminals and doesn't prioritize taxpayer waste in its coverage. With this story, CBC is just clearly not meeting their own journalistic standards and are failing to adequately inform the public. There's your example. Tell me I'm wrong. The CBC must do better. I plan to launch a complaint to the with the CBC ombudsman. It won't be my first. Well, anyways, that's I'm going to follow that guy. That's a great little deconstruction there. Love to see more of that happening from the mainstream media sources. But I don't think I'll read any comments. There's a bunch of stuff talking about the COVID-19 and the PSYOPs. And I do want to read something else, but I'll let you go next. Kind of about my, I was going to do a title on this. It's like Canada's Smith-Mundt Act has been going around.
All right. Well, let's take a look at this one. Canada slaps higher tariffs on Chinese steel. Why would they do that? Well, Ottawa said the measure will ensure Canadian steel producers are more competitive by protecting them against trade diversion from other countries. What a crazy concept. Weren't we just complaining about this? About other countries doing this? I mean, not that I disagree. I'm not saying I disagree with it. But I mean, what a crazy time and a thing to say about putting tariffs onto someone when you're freaking out about someone else putting tariffs on things. Everyone keeps freaking out because we have a reel going on about the, remember we did the story about Trump's tariffs and how they might, and everyone's like, well, who's paying that? And I'm like, I don't care who's paying it. If they are paying it and it is going to the consumer, it's a consumption tax against the consumer who bought something instead of against just the general population for existing. Why am I paying the taxes if, you know, if it can be dealt with through consumption and people are still buying the stuff? Sounds like a win to me.
Oh, that's interesting. How do you think that you would pay more for if there wasn't tariffs on something?
I wouldn't. The only argument against the UF tariffs against Canadian goods would be for job protection. That's it.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, maybe we are losing jobs. I don't know. But the jobs I see us losing, in at least out where I am, we don't have really a lot of jobs in that sector. We make energy that goes to the US that is still going every day, tariffed or not. And that's about it. You know, I'd imagine we're selling grain and stuff down there.
Yeah, I mean, the Americans will have to pay more for the tariffs to buy other goods. But the point is that eventually then you start making stuff yourself. I mean, it gives you a better analysis on making it yourself instead of having some other government subsidize it. You're paying more from your government, and then those revenues are hopefully being used instead of taxes.
Exactly. And the inflation is down for them too. So it's like, it's hard to say that it's costing them a bunch more money. Canada will implement an additional 25% tariff on steel imports from China before the end of July in an attempt to prevent steel dumping, Prime Minister Mark Carney says. Ottawa said the measure will ensure Canadian producers are more competitive by protecting them against trade diversion from other countries. It will apply to steel imports from all non-US countries containing steel melted and poured in China. So do I read that to imply that if the US buys Chinese steel, they can then sell it to us?
Probably. I mean, wasn't there, I mean, maybe we should just add some context in here from a steel industry perspective. I mean, wasn't most contracts that we worked on in the steel industry, you couldn't use China steel anyways? I mean, you're basically going to North Korea and the States. There was South Korea?
Yeah, that would apply specifically to our industry, though, which is structural. Right. So anything else you're doing, you know, if you were doing any sort of railings, backyard, farm fencing, all that sort of stuff, you could be using it.
Right, okay.
Ours was like a data sheet problem in commercial buildings and stuff like that because it was a public safety factor.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to read that sentence again. So it will apply to steel imports from all non-US countries containing steel melted and poured in China. That would all non-US countries just can we just say all countries that aren't the US except the US? It's basically saying the same thing, right?
Yeah.
So it seems like a sweet deal for the U.S., really, exactly. More than Canada. Ottawa announced new steel. So now, because now the U.S. can buy cheap steel from China, mark it up a little bit and sell it to us and still undercut the Canadian steel manufacturers, presumably, theoretically.
Yes.
Ottawa announced, well, they tariff our steel 50%. The U.S., I mean. Ottawa announced new steel quotas on June 27th to bolster the industry in response to U.S. tariffs, which is ironic, I guess, by imposing a 50% surtax on steel imports exceeding 2024 levels from countries which Canada does not have a free trade agreement, which would exclude the U.S. So I don't know. I don't understand what we're doing. I mean, I guess protecting Canadian jobs somehow. And here is the man himself, the Carney bot, Carney the conservative, as it would seem. More conservative than the conservatives sometimes.
Oh, they got some brand new.
Conservatives are going to have to swing hard right to stay conservative. This is the interesting thing.
We will tighten. It's really low.
It's quiet.
We will tighten the tariff rate quota level to 50% of 2024 volumes and apply a 50% tariff on any imports beyond those levels. For steel products from partners with free trade agreements, we will introduce a tariff rate quota level for steel products at 100% of 2024 volumes and apply the same 50% tariffs on imports above those levels. The government is reviewing its remission framework to favor the use of Canadian steel and aluminum in Canadian-made products.
Wow. Also, what a concept.
Regional tariffs.
Why are you doing that now?
What a concept. Why start now?
What?
Imports from all non-US countries containing steel melted and poured in China. Our existing arrangements with our CUSMA partners will remain the same, including no changes to our current trade measures with the United States.
How much, how did those poor guys get selected to be in the picture? I mean, imagine if you're working in that warehouse and you had to go in the back.
That's good.
I would never do it. I'd quit before I had to stand behind there and watch.
I'd do it. And then I just like make some faces or something like that, you know?
Just be like, doing this.
Fucking blowjob. This is why we don't have 1,000 subscribers yet on YouTube. Let's go over to Charlie Angus. I believe this guy used to lead the NDP, right? Is that his claim?
No, I don't think so. I don't know. Did he? Mm-hmm. Do you want me to check or?
Look it up.
All right.
Let's see what he has. Well, let's find
out. I thought he was a media guy.
Shows you
how much we're in tune with what's going on. He was
definitely an MLA at some point. I'm certain of that. How fascism works. Hope in the dark.
He was an MP representing the riding Timmins, James Bay for the NDP in 2004 to 2025. Wow, so quite a while. He served as the NDP critic for various portfolios, including ethics, indigenous and northern affairs, natural resources, FEDNOR, income inequality, and affordability, was a deputy critic for labor.
So not a party leader.
Right.
Or gender diversity. What Canadians want to hear is the language and the framework for dealing with a nation that's beside us that's slipping into fascism and threat. I've been thinking a lot about Bob Woodward's book, War, where he gives the inside scoop of the analysis that was starting to come in the intelligence community in the United States about the transition of Putin's rising bellicose rhetoric against Ukraine to actually taking the step towards war. At the time, the analysis that they were getting that Putin was serious was just considered insane. It was loony. Who would do such a thing? They shared the intelligence with the Brits. The Brits wouldn't believe it. They took the intelligence to President Zelensky. Even he was hugely skeptical. It made no sense for Putin to launch a war. I believe right now we're in a situation where we need to start talking about what Trump may do. The difference between Putin and Trump, obviously, is that Putin is a very focused global chess player, whereas Trump is hugely erratic. And he responds in panic to domestic crises. Am I saying that he's going to attack Canada? No, I'm not saying that. But I'm saying that 6 or 8 months ago, such concepts or thoughts would have been insane. Now we don't know, and we need to prepare.
What do you think, Graham? Do we need to prepare?
Yeah, we should have prepared a long time ago. I mean,
to be militarily invaded by the U.S.?
No, we should be prepared to work with the U.S.
Well, that's what he's talking about, getting invaded, like Crimea style.
Well, I mean, hey, it might happen.
Alberta got annexed.
I'm not putting it past that Trump doesn't want North America to secure his hegemony.
Militarily?
Yeah, maybe.
Doesn't that kind of ruin the hegemony?
Why?
Well, because then it'd just be kind of an asshole.
We're being taken over by other countries right now, right? That aren't in favor of the U.S. We're tying our boat to the EU, and we got let India and China get involved in all our stuff. I mean, we are a risk to him.
Yeah, but you still have to have support. If you want your face on Rushmore, you still need this huge support of the people. Otherwise, it won't happen, you know.
Well, he's losing. I mean, dude, he doesn't have the support of the people on a lot of stuff right now. He's dropping the ball big time. I mean, look what's happening. Epstein thing, and I mean, now who knows?
Oh, I just seen a clip. It's a huge hoax. It's a Democrat. It's a Clinton hoax.
What part's a hoax?
The whole list.
Oh, the list is a hoax. Yeah.
Right. You seen him say that, right? Again, he's doubled down on that.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. They've done the worst job at rolling this whole thing out, the worst job that ever could be imagined. I mean, I can't believe how badly they're messing it up. And now apparently, I don't know, is Israel attacking other people now too? And Putin is are we sending more stuff to NATO? Like it feels like it's unraveling in a lot of ways. So
it seems like it's unraveling.
I mean, I guess all I'm getting at is they don't need maybe they don't have support right now, but if a false flag happened or if something happened where America could say Canada is a huge risk, we are annexing the whole country.
Maybe it'll have to be 9/11 style.
Yeah. I mean, it'd be something pretty bad, right?
Yeah. It'd have to be like homegrown Canadians doing crazy stuff.
Unless there's a way to do it where we become more integrated economically without like actually saying we're taking it over. But what if they just opened up all the trade, all the stuff? And like, what if Carney basically like sold off Canada to the States? But you don't have to even say it's like, you could still say, oh, you're another country, but really the America just takes over.
Yeah. Like South Korea.
Go to one currency and open up all the trade barriers. Like, who's that guy from the Dragon's Den that's kind of been trying to push an economic alliance more so, you know? I think that's what he's talking about is, you know, keep a lot of your other Canadian stuff, but just open up the market.
Speaking of Canadian stuff, RCMP refused to disclose immigration status of Edmonton duo charged in cross-province human trafficking case. Wow. So you got to assume it's not good, right? Because if they were white dudes, they'd tell us right away. or they'll just say they're not immigrants. Both men have been released from custody and are scheduled to appear in Grand Prairie Provincial Court on August 11th. Think they'll show up?
No.
A year-long RCMP investigation into human trafficking across Alberta has resulted in charges against an Edmonton father and son accused of exploiting immigrant workers at businesses in Kalmar and Fox Creek. While police confirmed that the four alleged victims and two suspects were legally in Canada, they refused to say whether any were temporary foreign workers, permanent residents, or held other immigration statuses. The investigation launched in July 24 was triggered by tips to Alberta employment standards regarding questionable labor practices at Kalmar Gas Station and the Grizzly Motor Hotel in Fox Creek. I bet you that place is a real dump. What investigators uncovered was a pattern of alleged exploitation involving unpaid wages, excessive work hours, coercion, and the manipulation of vulnerable immigrants. The accused, Yun So Lee, 55, of Edmonton, four counts of trafficking persons, four counts of material benefit from trafficking, and one count of criminal harassment. And Ju Hyup Lee, 26, of Edmonton, one count of trafficking people, and the other one. The allegations, according to the RCMP, workers were brought into a coercive employment scheme that included working up to 90 hours a week with no proper compensation, wages withheld or stolen through fraudulent deductions, passports and documentation controlled by employers, threats and harassment used to silence complaints, workers placed in rundown or overpriced employer-controlled housing. So, I don't know. Maybe it's just a nothing burger, but it would seem to be that the immigrants are running. Authorities recovered $160,000 in unpaid wages owed to the exploited workers.
Wow, that's quite a bit.
Alberta OH&S issued $60,000 in fines to the operator of the Grizzly Motor Hotel and an additional $10,000 penalty for obstructing investigators. RCMP say they handled 180 human trafficking files in 2024, including 21 labor trafficking cases. In the first 6 months of 2025 alone, 65 cases have already been opened, which is less than last year would have been by 50%. No, by 30%. A sharp increase attributed in part to better coordination. How can they say that's an increase? They did 180 last year and they've done 65 in half of this year. That's on pace for 130.
I don't know.
Anyway, trafficking RCMP inspector Brent Meyer emphasized that trafficking doesn't always look like what people imagine. So, I don't know. Seems sketchy, and it seems like immigrants picking on immigrants.
Yeah. All right, I'm going to do mine then. So this is just a little Chris Erickson here. He's talking about, to those outside of Canada that are interested, Canada's landscape, installed prime minister, installed governor general, installed RCMP commissioner, unelected privy council, unelected Senate, unelected judiciary, opposition is controlled, mainstream media is controlled. I mean, that's a pretty good summary. I just like it all like wrapped up into that little bullet point there. SOS.
All of which is constitutional.
What?
All of which is constitutional.
Yeah, well, that's the point, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No one noticed for 150 years. Hey, yeah. Wait a second.
So I'm not going to go through all the comments. I'm just going to move to this next one, which is my title here. From Raven News, breaking: behavioral science unit operating from Prime Minister's office. We talked about this a while back, but I figured it's worth like, oh, this isn't what my title is. My title is The Nudge, right? Oh, yeah, no, this is it. This is The Nudge. Okay. Most Canadians have never heard of it, but Impact Canada, operating under the Privy Council office, has been quietly using behavioral science to shape public policy and influence how Canadians think and act. What you need to know: Impact Canada is a federal program launched in 2017 to nudge public behavior. So this is very similar to the one that's happening in the UK, right? Which Cass Sunstein, the author of the Harvard White Paper on Conspiracies from 2009, was involved directly in the UK one. So interesting how it's coming from, you know, that paper, I think. to nudge public behavior using psychology, economics, and social science. It is run by the Impact and Innovation Unit, which sits directly within the Prime Minister's office. So this is kind of interesting, right? It would be like a little on a flow chart, kind of like the, you know, the dotted line to HR. It's kind of like that, you know, giving it direct access to top level government decision making. The team size, only about 18 core staff, including specialists in behavioral science, finance, data, and policy. More than $720 million has been deployed through outcomes-based programs, including behavior-modifying trials, challenge prizes, and experimental policy tools. What are they doing? Over 10 major behavioral trials have already been run, targeting how Canadians spend, save, conserve energy, or respond to public health directives. Methods used, RCTs, data manipulation, targeted psychological techniques designed to subtly alter your decisions, all without people realizing it. And why this matters, some believe this can improve public services. Others argue it opens the door to quiet government manipulation, influencing public without consent or transparency. This unit is not science fiction. It's real, active, and directly funded by your tax dollars, embedded in the highest office of the Canadian government. Is this ethical governance or psychological overreach? Canadians deserve answers. Well, what do you think, Darren? Is it ethical governance or psychological overreach?
Well, Bob, I don't know, but I'm sure it's been going on for a long time. They just finally, I mean, everyone's just sort of finally switched on in Canada a little bit. Not everyone, but enough to start raising a ruckus.
Yeah.
You got to assume it started the exact same time as the American one did, right? Or shortly thereafter.
What do you mean?
The American Nudge Unit in the States, didn't they actually call it the Nudge Unit?
No, that's the UK one.
Oh, when did that one start? Well, that's even closer. We definitely started when they started.
Yeah. But speaking of American and UK, American and Canadian sort of overlapping propaganda programs, this has been going around too. I want to get your take on this, Darren. This is just so everyone knows exactly when the news turned into mercenaries. So it says here, this is CBC is fake news, speaks volumes. In 1954, there was a statute in the Criminal Code of Canada that said it was illegal for media to lie to the public. In 2019, Bill C-39 was voted on and passed in Parliament to remove it. Still trust the media? Still trust the government? Do you think this is accurate, this statement?
I don't know. Do you have backup?
I went and checked with Grok on it, and I did. Daniel Negase discussed and warned people about this. Yeah. So I'm not going to go through all the comments, just people, railing against it, but it's not quite like this. Because I was thinking, what does that remind you of, if it was true?
Smith Muntz.
Yeah, exactly. So I was asking Grok about it a little bit, and it basically what happened was that here. Let me read this paragraph, and I want to help you to help me understand this. The claim that the Criminal Code statute in 54 made it illegal for media to lie to the public, and that this was repealed by Bill C-39 in 2019. It refers to section 181 of the Criminal Code and its subsequent repeal. Let's break it down, it says here. So the Criminal Code as it existed in 1954, consolidation and earlier dating back to the 19th century, stated, so this is what it was like in the 50s. Everyone who willfully publishes a statement, tale, or news that he knows is false. So everyone who willfully publishes a statement that tale or news that he knows is false and that causes or is likely to cause injury or mischief to a public interest is guilty of an indictable offense and liable to imprisonment for a term not exceeding 2 years. So that sounds pretty hardcore, right? So you wouldn't be able to do that in the media, right? So this provision, often referred to as the false news law, originated from English common law and was intended to prevent the spread of deliberately false information that could harm the public interest. It was not specifically aimed at the media, but applied broadly to anyone who knowingly published false statements. The law was rarely used, but it remained in the Criminal Code for decades. Then, in 1992, the Supreme Court of Canada in R versus Zundel struck down Section 181 as unconstitutional. Do you know why? Can you guess why this would have been a case?
Freedom of expression.
Yeah, kind of.
Because that would be,
you know, can you let's just get a little more conspiratorial here. What would have triggered this case? Like, what on earth in Canada would somebody have said?
No.
Okay, let's see what happens here. The case involved Ernst Zundel, who was prosecuted for publishing Holocaust denial materials. Ding, ding, ding. Good one.
So, I mean, the take would, my take is that in a free society, the government shouldn't have any say over what is and what isn't true and what can be published. Now, I'm not going to defend the Canadian mainstream media in that, but that law could be flipped around right on us if it still existed and say that what we're doing is fake news and now we're going to jail. And I would also argue that this kind of, you know, it wouldn't have outright legalized Holocaust denial in Canada. It definitely has muddied the waters to the point where I don't think you'd be charged for just saying that you didn't think it happened anymore. I think you could only be charged now if you used that argument to ferment hatred against people. But I think you could legally say it didn't happen.
The court ruled
just yet, but.
But yeah, the court ruled that the provision violated Section 2B of the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms, freedom of expression, because it was overly broad and lacked a clear, pressing, and substantial purpose. The court noted that even deliberate lies could have a social value in fostering debate, and the vague wording of injury or mischief to a public interest made the law prone to abuse. However, the ruling did not remove Section 181 from the Criminal Code. It simply rendered it unenforceable, as only Parliament can amend or repeal statutes. So they said basically, this is unenforceable, but it was all triggered by somebody that was trying to deny Holocaust. So now they're saying that he's allowed to deny the Holocaust and that this is rendered unenforceable.
Yes.
Isn't it weird that that would be the thing that they rendered this unenforceable? So, and then this is the thing that's going around the internet, which is wrong. Bill C-39 and the repeal of this Section 181. It was introduced in 2017 by Jody Wilson-Raybould. It aimed to remove provisions from the Criminal Code that had been ruled unconstitutional by the court or appellate courts. So among these, it was Section 181. But the repeal of it was part of a broader effort to update the Criminal Code. Let me see, you're skipping through. The removal of this section was not controversial in itself, as it had been unenforceable since 92. It was seen as a housekeeping measure. So, but I don't think it passed. It was introduced,
but not public knowledge.
That's interesting. What do you mean?
Well, we didn't know that, you know, we thought it was, you know, we were under the assumption that that was still legal in Canada.
Right, right. Okay. That's interesting. Well, it might be from later on. It might be since 92 there was later hate speech laws that now make it like that. Or maybe what you're saying is true, that it goes back that far to the 90s when we thought it was not allowed. So anyways, Bill 39 was introduced in the 42nd Parliament first session, but it did not progress beyond the first reading due to procedural delays and the dissolution of Parliament in 2019. However, the repeal of Section 181 was later incorporated into Bill 75, C-75, an act to amend the Criminal Code, the Youth Criminal Justice Act, and other acts to make consequential amendments to other acts, which received royal assent on June 21st, 2019. So that included a broader set of Criminal Code reforms, and the appeal section was one of them.
This says that Bill C-39 did pass, and it was granted royal assent on June 21st, 2018, and an act to amend the Criminal Code, Bill C-39.
Including those who remove. Bill was seen as housekeeping. It said it didn't pass beyond the first reading, though. That's what this one says.
This says it became law and got royal assent. Let's read it. I have the bill here.
Okay.
It's short enough to read, I think. So, Charter Statement Bill C-39, an act to amend the criminal code, unconstitutional provisions, and make consequential amendments to other acts. The Minister of Justice prepares a charter statement to help inform public and parliamentary debate on government bill, blah, 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 charter consideration. So here's what they took out. Promoting the rule of law by repealing or amending invalid criminal code provisions. Bill C-39 would repeal or amend several criminal code provisions that the Supreme Court of Canada has previously found to be of no force or effect because of inconsistency with the charter. Loitering, so you can loiter. People can't stop you from loitering unless it's private property. Spreading.
You know, that's super interesting, right? Of what's happening in the cities. I mean, they had to get rid of that, right?
Well, it says here that it was found unconstitutional by the Supreme Court in 1994.
Okay.
Spreading false news, which is Section 181, which was found unconstitutional in the case you mentioned in 1992. Unlawful object murder, whatever that is. What do you think that is?
I don't know. I don't understand it. I don't know.
Like using a sword or something?
I guess, yeah.
Part of which was found unconstitutional in 90. Murder in commission of offenses, found unconstitutional in the same case in 1990. Impaired driving, presumption of accuracy of breath or blood samples were found unconstitutional in 2012. Abortion found unconstitutional in 88. Credit for which would be the banning of abortion, I'm assuming. I don't know. Credit for pre-sentence custody and sentencing found unconstitutional, blah, blah, blah. So I don't know for sure, but my thing here says, yes. Bottom line is yes. Bill C-39 passed and is now law.
Interesting. Well, we have maybe Grok is hallucinating that. That's a good comparison between your assistant and Grok.
So ask it straight up. Ask Grok if it got, what about getting royal assent on June 21st, 2018? Because mine could be retarded too.
2018 2019 2018. Yeah, I mean, one of the main things I was going back and forth about was it's like, you know, you weren't allowed to libel somebody, but the media, it seems like there was a gap left where the media could lie and propagandize, and it sort of slipped. To me, there was like a almost like a loophole in a way. Clarifying Bill in the previous discussion, I noted that was repealed, but it did not progress. Instead, the repeal of 181 was ultimately enacted through Bill 75. The claim is the date you mentioned does not align with Bill C-39 or the repeal of Section 181. It's possible that ex post or related claims misstated the year or confused Bill C-39 with another. To address your question, let's examine what legislation received royal assent on June 21st, 2018. Bill C-59. Bill C-59, Bill C-66, C-74. The date, June 21, 2018, likely came up in the ex post or related discussions due to a conflation of timelines or bills. Here's how this ties to your concerns about media deception and the Smith-Mundt Act comparison. And then it gets into media subsidies, perceived deception, gaps in addressing disinformation, which is what I was saying. Like, you know, just because the media doesn't libel somebody or cause this other harm doesn't mean they can't just legally manipulate the public.
I don't know. Mine keeps hammering it down.
Yeah, that's interesting.
So was it, what does Grok say? Was it part of C-75?
Yeah, it says on that day that you mentioned, it was Bill C-59, 66, and 74.
Here we go. Bill C-39 was initially introduced to repeal unconstitutional provisions, including blah, blah, blah. These same amendments were absorbed into Bill C-75. When C-75 passed and received royal assent on June 21st, 2019. Rather than passing multiple standalone bills, the government bundled them for efficiency into C-75.
For deception?
Well, that's
ugly. Sorry, I just don't trust anything they're doing.
It's much bigger, it looks like. I'm just trying to see if I can find it. It's 34 pages long. As well be C-75, the bill amends many aspects of criminal law, reclassify a number of criminal offenses, restrict the availability of preliminary inquiries to adults to a maximum term of imprisonment of 14 years, better protect victims of intimate partner violence, modernize bail practices, give judges and police greater discretion regarding administration of justice offenses, strengthen the case management powers of justice, reform the jury selection process. So here's where it brought Bill C-75 reintroduces legislative amendments from the following bills: C-28, C-38, and C-39.
Okay.
C-75, C-46, C-51, and C-59. Man. Reclassification of indictable offenses, punishment of rioter, neglect by police officer, offenses in relation to military forces, which is interesting timing.
Right.
Possession of a forged passport. Man, this is a long list. It's probably mostly nothing burger, though, other than that. That 181, I'm sure, is the... Ooh, in order to streamline the execution process, Bill C-75 provides the following warrants and orders may be executed anywhere in Canada without the need to have them endorsed. Wiretap authorizations, search warrants, restraint orders, general warrants, assistant orders, DNA warrants, warrants for bodily impressions, tracking device warrants, transmission data recorder warrants, and drug search warrants. The peace officer who executes the warrants must be empowered to act in the place where the warrant is executed. Traditionally, territorial jurisdiction is an important aspect of criminal law in Canada. Generally, the code requires warrants that are to be executed in another province to be endorsed by a judge in another province by making an endorsement on it. So that's seems like they can get warrants easier. Whoa. In response to the appeal court decisions, Bill C-75 repeals or amends the following provisions of the code. Section 159, anal intercourse. Illegal again.
Yeah, there's something in there about that, too.
It was found unconstitutional in 95. Section 179, vagrancy. So there's the spreading false news again. And the rest, I think, is pretty okay. That's the weird part of it, I would say.
All right. Let me read the final summary, the similarities and differences with Canada and the Smith-Mundt, just to sort of summarize this here. So it says similarities and differences with Canada. This is good. Similarities: both the repeal of Section 181 and the Smith-Mundt Modernization Act are seen as loosening restrictions on information dissemination, fueling public fears of unchecked propaganda. In both cases, the legal changes were technical. Section 181 was already unenforceable. Smith-Mundt materials were already accessible online, but became symbolic of broader concerns about media and government collusion. The difference is Section 81 was a criminal law targeting individuals, not specifically media or government, while Smith-Mundt directly addressed government-funded propaganda. Canada's CBC is a public broadcaster with domestic focus, unlike Voice of America's foreign orientation. The U.S. has no direct equivalent to the CBC's funding model, though NPR faces similar criticisms.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
There you go.
All right. Well, here is 5-time convicted impaired driver charged after 4-car crash in Brampton.
How many? 5-time? Oh, geez, his eyes are pretty bloodshot there, eh? Wow.
Yeah, he looks a little drunk. 5-time convicted impaired driver, Kushal Karasam. A 5-time repeat offender for impaired driving-related convictions is facing yet more impaired charges following a 4-vehicle collision in Brampton over the weekend. At what point do you just throw him in jail? Peel police say on Saturday around 4:15 p.m. a four-car crash happened at the intersection of Highway 50 and Coleraine Drive, and three people were taken to hospital. Cops say a 21-year-old male remains in unstable critical condition, so he might have killed someone. What is this?
Shit, man.
Kusho Karasam was charged with three counts of prohibited driving, one of each of impaired driving. He was released on a recognizance of bail with conditions not to drive. So they just told him not to drive and let him go again.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no indicator that this guy will stop. He's on three separate lifetime driving prohibitions at the time of collision.
I mean, what does it take, right? The guy needs to get recovery, right? He needs to get sober.
Yeah, he can't be let out in public until so.
Yeah.
Because now he's killing people, possibly. Yeah. We are committed to holding dangerous drivers such as Dr. Kasrim accountable for their actions. I'm not convinced that you are. Our thoughts are with the family of those injured in this horrific crash, said Peel's Regional Police's Deputy Chief Mark Andrews in a statement. I'm not convinced that you are. So anyway, here's a number if you want to call them and tell them they're full of shit. Investigators are asking anyone who witnessed the collision or who may have dash cam footage to call investigators with the Major Collision Bureau at 905-453-2121, extension 3710. I would tell them to fucking keep this guy in jail until he's sober.
Yeah.
Dead.
They can't do it anymore. That's harming him. That's taking away his constitutional rights.
What about that 21-year-old kid's constitutional
rights? I know. It's harm reduction was. I went through the courses on this stuff. The harm reduction is supposed to, and you know, be all encompassing, not just the person that's doing it, but it's the community, the police, everybody is supposed to be under the umbrella of harm reduction. You see this? This is just sticking with Brampton here, as Brampton is falling.
I just closed this exact thing once I seen you pull it up. Not the exact same tweet, but the same story.
Okay, here we go.
Is we have received and are investigating a threat that was made not just against the mayor, but his family as well. And so,
because it's a threat against the Brampton mayor and his family,
because of the nature of that threat, we felt it was prudent, out of an abundance of caution, to supplement him with police security until that threat was investigated appropriately. And so that's the crux of it. And again, I would just liken it to, you know, the mayor, of course, he's a mayor. He's also a community member who has received a threat that we've assessed and assessed as requiring additional security in order to make sure, out of an abundance of caution, that there's no issues. And that's what we've done.
Can you tell us where the threat came from, and if it came from outside of Canada, which country it came from?
I can tell you the investigation is still ongoing. I believe that we are very close to being able to share additional details, but to share them at this point potentially could jeopardize the investigation. We will do that once we're able to do that.
But within or without, within Canada or not?
Within.
Within, he answered that. Ah, good for him. So, I mean, there's another thing about Brampton, but I don't want to get into bashing Brampton too hard right now, but there's some stuff going around about, you know, how it used to be like, you know, and they grew up. I mean, of course they were going to grow as a country and stuff, but they used to be like a 10,000 person town, and now it's 150,000 or no, maybe even more than that or something. But it was talking about how bad that's, how it's changed right now. But I don't want to get into bashing Brampton too much. They got a lot of going on.
They got to get the fuck out of Brampton.
It's going to be like the new Florida. The Florida man is going to be the new Brampton man.
Set with less freedom.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'll be from India.
So can I do one more before we wrap it up?
Sure.
Because I feel like it should be done sooner than later. I want to know what you think about this too. This is a thread from Sheila Gunn Reid. Over 120,000 mail-in ballots weren't counted. Did you hear about this?
I seen something about it.
And that's just the beginning. Here's why Canadians are right to question Elections Canada. And no, this is not a conspiracy theory. Let's walk through the receipts. One, according to Elections Canada, 1.3 million special ballots were issued in the April 28th federal election, but only 1.2 million, I'm just rounding all the numbers off here, were counted. That means 120,000 ballots vanished, over 9%. Number two, Elections Canada won't say if these ballots were lost late or just tossed. This isn't a theory. It's their own data. Three, the agency has already apologized for dumping 822 ballots in Coquitlam, mislabeling ballots in Terrebonne, Quebec, where the Liberals won by one vote. Even CBC had to admit something's fishy. Elections Canada is now formally investigating the Terrebonne race. Number five, and this isn't new, in the 2021 election, 123 ballots weren't mailed back in time. 90,000 came in late and weren't counted. That's 213,000 voters disenfranchised in a single election. Also real, a non-citizen voted illegally in Edmonton. He admitted he knew he wasn't eligible. Fined 1,000. Another guy in Richmond Hill voted twice, once by mail, once in person, also fined $1,000. Because apparently your vote only costs about as much as a speeding ticket. Elections Canada Chief Stéphane Perrault met privately with NDP HQ staff to help craft Bill C-65. No conservatives, no bloc, just the NDP and bureaucrats in a back room. That bill would delay the next election by 1 week, conveniently pushing it past the pension eligibility date for 28 Liberal and NDP MPs. Wow. Wow. Yeah, that's pretty crazy. So, I mean, I think this is a big nothing burger, really. I mean, so they mail out a bunch of ballots and a bunch of them don't get counted. Like, what do you think people are going to, or is it because they're specially requested and then they don't get counted because the people are either late or what's your thought about this whole thing?
I don't know, but it's too late to change anything is my thought on it. Even if it is real, you know?
So there. Log in and register this content. Oh, it's for members only. Okay. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, just what if it's just 9% of the people that order ballots don't vote? Right? Is that a pretty acceptable error limit or?
Oh, yeah.
Right? 9%? So you order 1,000 special ballots, 90 of them don't get.
I mean, you're just like, fuck it, man. I ain't saying it.
What? Right? I mean, what's the big deal? I mean, you think you're going to account for every ballot you send out? Now, if it was more than you sent out, would be a problem?
Yeah. Fuck up. I heard that Transportation Ontario is sending out a bunch of letters to make truck drivers retest.
Wow.
Yeah, so you just get a letter in the mail and you got 120 days to retest or you lose your license.
Maybe we're making some progress.
Slowly. I mean, I give semis a wide berth now.
You got to be careful on the roads. You have to be.
You got
to
be paying attention. Gotta be
on those, you got to be paying attention. I've been thinking about that too lately.
You got to pay attention.
It's hard driving out here. You're in the middle of nowhere. You hardly see any cars. I mean, it's like.
You gotta that's when you really got to watch.
Yeah.
Especially when, I mean, not all the time, but when a car is coming, just pay attention to what he's doing.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, I came over a hill the other day on my way back from setting up the camps. And there's just a cop got his buddy pulled over. He's got the whole lane blocked, like right over a hill. And I had just passed like seven fucking vehicles at the same time too. And, which is fine. I wasn't even speeding that much. They were going like 80 and the speed limit's 100. So I was only going like 120 and the roads are so straight for so long here that if it's downhill, I was just in the other lane for like a couple minutes, you know? And then I come over the hill and this cop's like right there. So I slow down, go around him, no problem. But I'm like, man, what a terrible spot.
Well, the problem is you got to slow down to 60 now, which is creepy as fuck. So you got to go past a cop pulling somebody over like you feel like a rubbernecker. So I got busted in Saskatchewan because these two cops work together and the one will pull somebody over and then the other guy catches people going by too fast. So if you don't slow down to 60, you get busted and it feels awkward, right? I don't want to slow down to 60 going past the cop. That feels wrong, right? You should just be going the speed limit or maybe slightly under. You know what I mean? I feel like a looky-loo.
A looky-loo?
But now they want you to slow right down going by those guys.
What's a looky-loo? This is new to me.
You know what a looky loo is. Somebody like gawks at accidents.
A rubbernecker? Looky-loo is a rubbernecker?
Yeah.
All right. Well, we guys hope you guys. We guys hope you guys enjoy the show this week. A-list.ca if you do choose to support us. Like, subscribe, share, comment, all that good stuff on YouTube. I guess TikTok too. I guess there's a bunch of you on TikTok. Sorry, we won't ever interact with you there, but please share it and like it and let us know how we make money there. I don't know how that works. But thanks for all that stuff. Like, subscribe, share, support. Check out grammerica.ca for other podcasts, over 700 episodes over there. grammericaoutlaw.ca, there's like 300 and some over there.
420.
If you're a plus member.
Oh, right.
And adultbrain.ca for over 170 audiobooks over there available now, ebooks too, paperback books, whatever you want. And bigskytallow.ca. If you get some tallow from there, we make a couple bucks a jar. So if you guys do that, all those things, it's helped support us and it'll help us push past episode 100. So our fate's in your hands. We love you guys. Thanks for listening. And we will see you next week.
Who's gonna kill this sacred cow? You were never political anyhow. Since when did you start trusting in the government? Since when was it okay to ridicule and shame your neighbor? Your opinions have become as fickle as artificial flavors. What matters most to you? What the TV host told you to do? Or a moral compass that points true north, oh true? Who's gonna kill this sacred cow? You were never religious anyhow. Since when did you kiss the ring on the hand of the Pope? Since when do we need pharmaceuticals to cope? Your soul has become, ever-loving soul has become, as brittle as communion wafers. What matters most to you? What the Holy Ghost told you to do? Or a moral compass that points true north, oh true? I'm gonna kill this sacred cow. Bureaucrats think I'm non-essential anyhow. Since when has our culture become so lowbrow? It's all touchscreens, and nobody has any know-how. Your idea of fun is taking 1,001 photos of your duck face. Matters most to you what the celebrity's post told you was cool, or a moral compass that points true north, oh true? I'm gonna kill this sacred cow. I'm gonna kill your 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 sacred cow.